Manuscript Releases, Volume 18, Numbers 1301 to 1359. M.R. Number 1346. Counsel to Physicians and Medical Students. The Necessity of Delegating Responsibility and Training Assistance. The truth, God's truth, must be cherished in the heart and held in the strength of God, or the powers of Satan will wrench it from you. You need to be self-reliant and yet teachable. Then you can have strength to be faithful to duty. To trust to your own resources, your own wisdom or strength, is folly. You will be brought to confusion if you do this. You can walk securely only when you follow the counsel of God. Dr. Kellogg has felt afraid to trust responsibility with some of the physicians because he saw in them inefficiency in some respects. They were not thorough and caretaking. Men of reasoning powers are greatly to blame if they continually make mistakes. These involve serious consequences. While Dr. Kellogg carries the greatest, heaviest responsibilities, he should have men by his side who will do as he instructs them. He should not do so much himself, for he is only a mortal man, and his powers have been taxed to the utmost limit again and again. He should lay upon others responsibilities which they should carry. There are some who are ready to undertake the most difficult work and feel competent to do it justice, who have not shown tact and wise discrimination in the simplest duties devolving upon them. This makes Dr. Kellogg afraid to trust them. They are ready to grasp the highest round of the ladder without beginning at the lowest round and climbing as he has done. Dr. Kellogg has gained his scientific knowledge by agonizing effort, and he has devoted many hours to devising, planning, and making improvements while others have been sleeping. He has taxed every power in obtaining an experience, while many would have carried out plans to enjoy themselves. He should not have sacrificed health and strength in order to meet the pressing demands. While these improvements have been going forward, talent has not been brought in to correspond with the enlarging of the institution to accommodate larger numbers. While the students should be willing to learn of Dr. Kellogg as children, he should feel the affection of a father for the students. He should not become discouraged because they are so slow to learn, and should not discourage them if they make mistakes. We are all mortal and liable to err. He should kindly point out their errors, and they should feel grateful for any instruction he can give them. A haughty spirit should not be countenanced, but all should be willing to learn, and the doctor should be willing to teach and educate, so that, should he be called away to recruit his health, or should disease lay him low, there would be those who could work intelligently and the sanitarium not become demoralized. It will be difficult for Dr. Kellogg to lay off even a portion of the burden he has so long carried, but health and life and the salvation of his soul require a change. He should now save himself before he is a complete wreck. Similar advice was given to my husband, that he should let others bear the burdens while he could aid them by his advice, counsel, and experience. But he saw that others made mistakes and were not far-seeing and judicious, that elements of character were wanting in them, which he possessed to a large degree. Therefore, he waited for somebody fully competent to take his place, and kept on and on in much the same way as he had done, until he finally dropped into the grave, and those men upon whom he did not dare to leave the burdens had to take them, and that without his advice, his words of counsel, and his experience to help them. His voice might have been heard today if he had heeded the words of warning given. He was disgusted and distressed because there were so few who would be discerning and who would be burden-bearers, and thought that in order to save blunders, he must do all that he could himself. In his clear foresight, he could see what needed to be done, and his brethren were content to let him be brains for them and execute for them, while, instead of becoming more efficient, they were growing less and less self-reliant. The simple, common business matters were brought before him by those connected with him in the work, until he became so accustomed to it that he felt it must be so. And if he was not consulted about even minor matters, he felt that it was not just right. Dr. Kellogg is acting over the same experience, and Brother Murphy, Brother Hall, and others suffer him to do this. They are, in many respects, machine men. They have powers of mind, but these are becoming weakened because they do not exercise their reasoning faculties, but prefer to use Dr. Kellogg's mind in simple matters. Brother Hall has his position, but the doctor, as far as thinking and planning are concerned, has the work to do himself.
Dr. Kellogg should never have encouraged these men to depend upon him to be mind and brains for them. He has served tables too much. There should be a superintendent who possesses breadth of thought and independence of judgment, that will use the powers of his own brain and grow in capacity and judgment, becoming every year more and more capable of bearing responsibilities. It is a sin and a shame to call the mind of Dr. Kellogg to so many little matters, and he does these men a wrong in allowing it. He cannot grasp his arms around the entire institution. He must train his helpers to be self-reliant, independent, wise generals, in place of acting as general over everything himself. These men have important faculties given them of God, to be used and to be strengthened by use. Dr. Kellogg has larger responsibilities to take his time and engage his powers, and every ounce of burden should be lifted from him that can be. There ought to be, today, self-reliant men of enduring energy, thinking and planning and working at all the common matters without bringing one of them to the notice of the doctor. I regret that these men have been so dependent upon Dr. Kellogg. I am sorry that, as a wise general, he has not trained them to be self-reliant and has not refused to do their thinking and brain work, that they might have obtained an experience which today would be more valuable to them than gold. God does not demand of Dr. Kellogg such taxing service, even in the most important enterprises. He has been successful in his plans because he would not be defeated. If the brethren connected with him had faced stubborn difficulties and seen them give way before them because their courage would not be daunted nor their energy wearied, they might have thus obtained an experience that would be of value to them through all time and through eternity. There is no need that there should be so many helpless souls who will sink before difficulties. Elder Andrews might have lived had he encouraged and trained others to share the burdens he loaded himself down with. He deprived others of an education they might have had because he did so much himself and allowed them to rely upon his brain in place of doing their own thinking. Every man can be a man, a whole man, by patient continuance in well-doing, by resolutely overcoming cowardice and ignorance and inefficiency with thoughtful energy and zeal. There should be an entirely different order of things. Men should not be shadows of Dr. Kellogg, that, should the substance be removed, there would be nothing to make the shadow. They should never consent to be merely machines run by another man's brain. God has given them ability to think and act. He would have men connected with the institution, strong, firm, whole-souled, well-balanced men, who are diligent in cultivating their own powers of thought and who do not feel that they must have their minds trained to run in exactly the same channel that Dr. Kellogg's mind runs in, but to think independently and help him in planning. His plans are not always infallible, and a wise counselor might see failure where he would see only success. A good, strong mind to propose and counsel would be the greatest blessing the doctor could have. No one man's mind and judgment are sufficient to be a controlling power in any of our institutions. Therefore, councils need to be held. But there are those who, when they come into council, no sooner hear a proposition than they take it for granted it is infallible and stand ready to say yes and vote for it without carefully weighing the matter, probing it, sifting it, testing it, and giving it the benefit of deliberate thought. Such persons are mere ciphers. You should be men of force of character and depth of thought, seeing the judicious enterprises and laying hold of them, but bringing all your plans to the divine counselor. In order for men to be depended upon, there must be growth of powers, the exercise of every faculty, even in little things. Then power is acquired to engage in larger responsibilities. Individual responsibility and accountability are essential. Do not shrink from bearing your share of responsibilities because there are risks to run and something to be ventured. Do not leave others to be brains for you. You must train your powers to put forth strength and vigor. Then the entrusted talents will grow as a steady, uniform, unyielding energy is exercised in bearing individual responsibility. God would have man add, day by day, little by little, to his stock of ideas, acting as if the moments were jewels to be carefully gathered and discreetly cherished. He will thus acquire breadth of thought and strength of intellect.
Guarding against licentiousness. It is the spirit of the age to despise restraint, to desire to follow inclination, to jest and joke and be jolly in amusement with young ladies. And the result has been wrecks of character, encouragement to impurity, licentiousness, immorality, and marriages which have ruined the usefulness and efficiency of men and women who had ability and talents, but who have been unable to rise to any noble heights after their unwise marriages. Thus, the wheels of progress have been blocked, the powers of the mind dwarfed. I utter my earnest warning and protest against the familiar association of young men and women who intend to connect with our sanitarium. If they want to be men of God, let them deny their inclination and devote their God-given powers to doing good and being a blessing to society. Let them consecrate themselves unreservedly to God to save perishing souls. Dr. Sprague might have been an efficient and useful physician had he not wrecked his bark in a matrimonial alliance with one who could have no sympathy with his faith and could be no help to him in the Christian life. Dr. Fairfield might have proved a man of usefulness, a man of elevated, noble character. But he married a selfish, heartless, cold, icy-hearted woman. A good, noble Christian woman might have helped him in character building. But Mrs. Fairfield was his evil angel to accomplish his ruin. She was one to tear down and not to build up. She idolized herself and had no wealth of affection for anyone but herself. And ruin is the result of this connection. It is not a time when marriage should be regarded in the light of felicity. It is uncertain business. More misery than happiness is the result. And yet marrying and giving in marriage is as it was in the days of Noah. There seems to be no restraint, but passion and impulse have controlling power, and youth seem to be bewitched with lovesick sentimentalism.
For this reason, rules and regulations are highly essential to guard those connected with the sanitarium, the college, and the Office of Publication. And anyone who regards these restrictions as unnecessary has not spiritual discernment and will prove a hindrance rather than a help. Many seem to think these precautions are not essential, and their deportment pleads for greater liberty than the law of God allows them. It is an imperative duty to preserve the soul from impure thoughts and unholy actions. Iniquity abounds, and our Savior lifted his voice in warning, "As the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away." Sensuality is the sin of the age. But the religion of Jesus Christ will hold the lines of control over every species of unlawful liberty. The moral powers will hold the lines of control over every thought, word, and action. Guile will not be found in the lips of the true Christian. Not an impure thought will be indulged in, not a word spoken that is approaching to sensuality, not an action that has the least appearance of evil. The senses will be guarded. The soul that has Jesus abiding in it will develop into true greatness. The intelligent soul who has respect unto all of God's commandments through the grace of Christ will say to the passions of the heart as they point to God's great moral standard of righteousness, "Hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed." And the grace of Christ shall be as a wall of fire round about the soul. There are those who will say, "Oh, you need not be so particular. A little harmless flirtation will do no injury." And the carnal heart urges on to temptation and to the practical sanctioning of indulgences which end in sin. This is a low caste of morality, not meeting the high standard of the law of God. The vileness of the human heart is not understood. There are always individuals connected with our institutions whose characters are cast in an inferior mold, and they need but a word of encouragement from those in higher positions to take liberty to gratify the unholy heart. There are those at the sanitarium that are not open sinners. They hide their sins from human eyes. They have a fair outward morality. But the Lord's eye sees them. They find means to gratify the low, sensual propensities. Their lives are tarnished, and they are tarnishing others by their example.
These very ones carry a pretense of piety. They offer prayers, bear testimony in meetings, and are apparently serving the Lord. But their hearts are corrupt. Their conduct is condemned by the law of Jehovah, which they profess to keep. There are those who are not guilty of these gross transgressions, but who do not have spiritual discernment and see not the necessity of putting up the bars and of guarding every point lest iniquity should be practiced in our institutions. They cannot see any harm in the young people's being in one another's society, paying attention to each other, flirting, courting, marrying, and giving marriage. This is the main engrossment of this time with the worldlings, and genuine Christians will not follow their example, but will come out from all these things and be separate. In our sanitarium, our college, our offices of publication, and in every mission, the strictest rules must be enforced. Nothing can so effectually demoralize these institutions and our missions as the want of prudence and watchful reserve in the association of young men and young women. Give them freedom to go and come as they will in each other's company, and they will regard it as a restriction of their rights to be bound about with rules and regulations. Those who plead for the liberty to associate together are soon spoiled with lovesick sentimentalism.
The enervating influence of this much-to-be-dreaded disease unfits them for their duties, and they cannot fill any position of trust. The ever-increasing potency of vicious indulgences is so great and so strong that there is little room to hope for the recovery of souls who are thus afflicted, unless they can see the matter as God sees it and become so thoroughly disgusted as well as agonized over their course of action that they will have that repentance that needeth not to be repented of. Satan is making determined efforts to overcome those who advocate the commandments of God, that their principles shall become tarnished and their lives corrupt. It is a pitiful sight to see young men who are bound by no marriage ties, pursuing a foolish course, exhibiting the disease of lovesick sentimentalism. They are unbalanced in mind and have lost their sense of propriety of conduct so essential for a noble, virtuous character. But that which is the most to be deplored is to see married men who have companions and children fanning around the girls, and the girls making advances to them or encouraging their attentions. These attentions becloud the mind, benumb the senses as to the line that distinguishes right from wrong. Impure thoughts, indiscreet actions, unholy conduct, and next, the seventh commandment, transgressed. Indolence and gratification of unholy passions enslave the soul and hold the victim in chains of steel. There are agonizing struggles after his lost moral freedom, but he seldom is again a free man. He has stepped on Satan's ground and becomes the object of Satan's temptations. The standard must be the holy law of God, and every approach toward familiarity or attention of married men with young girls or with married women should be positively condemned. The plea of these liberty-loving young men and married men is for a little amusement, a hungering of sympathy, a little self-indulgence. They do not think of such a thing as weakening moral character or their power to resist temptation, nor of becoming vicious and impure. But they are tempting the devil to tempt them. The only safe course is to keep free from all these things. Do not see how close you can walk upon the brink of a precipice and be safe. Avoid the first approach to danger. The soul's interests cannot be trifled with. Your capital is your character. Cherish it as you would a golden treasure. Moral purity, self-respect, a strong power of resistance must be firmly and constantly cherished. There should not be one departure from reserve. One act of familiarity, one indiscretion, may jeopardize the soul in opening the door to temptation, and the power of resistance becomes weakened. The psalmist, when viewing the many snares and temptations to vice, inquires, "Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way?" This question is appropriate for everyone connected with our missions and every instrumentality of God. At this stage of our work, the answer comes by taking heed thereto according to thy word. It is necessary to maintain a living connection with heaven, seeking as often as did Daniel, three times a day, for divine grace to resist appetite and passion. Wrestling with appetite and passion, unaided by divine power, will be unsuccessful. But make Christ your stronghold, and the language of your soul will be, "In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us." Said the Apostle Paul, "I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway."
Let no one think he can overcome without the help of God. You must have the energy, the strength, the power of an inner life developed within you. You will then bear fruit unto godliness and will have an intense loathing of vice.
You need to constantly strive to work away from earthliness, from cheap conversation, from everything sensual, and aim for nobility of soul and a pure and unspotted character. Your name may be kept so pure that it cannot justly be connected with anything dishonest or unrighteous, but will be respected by all the good and pure. And it may be written in the Lamb's Book of Life, to be immortalized among the holy angels. I have been shown that Satan's specious temptations will come to the workers in every mission, to the workers in every institution in our land, to encourage familiarity, the men with the women. I write with a distressed heart that the women in this age, both married and unmarried, too frequently do not maintain the reserve that is necessary. They act like coquettes. They encourage the attentions of single and married men, and those who are weak in moral power will be ensnared. These things, if allowed, deaden the moral senses and blind the mind so that crime does not appear sinful. Thoughts are awakened that would not have been if woman had kept her place in all modesty and sobriety. She may have had no unlawful purpose or motive herself, but she has given encouragement to men who are tempted and who need all the help they can get from those associated with them. By being circumspect, reserved, taking no liberties, receiving no unwarrantable attentions, but preserving a high moral tone and become dignity, much evil might be avoided. A woman who will allow an unchaste word or hint to be uttered in her presence is not as God would have her. One that will permit any undue familiarity or impure suggestion does not preserve her godlike womanhood. Some may think these warnings unnecessary, but God has shown me that they are necessary in every mission, in every college, in every institution that we have established. The wise man has said, "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore, put away evil from thy flesh. We are in a day when iniquity abounds. There are those who have but little moral sense. Self-pollution has been practiced, and the moral powers are benumbed. Such have no just sense of holiness or purity. They are corrupt and will corrupt others. Miserable wrecks of humanity are everywhere. Some put on a religious garb, but the soul is defiled, and they corrupt other minds. They call evil good, and good evil. They are Satan's most efficient agents, and individuals of this stamp will connect with our institutions and with God's instrumentalities, masking their evil ways under pretension of godliness. Can we then be too particular, too circumspect? Safety lies in close adherence to rules and regulations in harmony with God's great moral standard of righteousness. And then there are those who, if so disposed, will find ways to secretly carry out their own inclinations and pursue a course of deception to avoid the censure of those they deem so particular. Some who have influence, who are apparently working for the interest of the sanitarium, encourage by their own course of action a disregard of rules and of order, and the influence of such persons goes a long way toward encouraging insubordination, especially in the direction of courtship and marriage. The parties are unfitted for their duties. They live an unreal life, indulge in too high and romantic visions of bliss, and in their desire to please each other, they become unfaithful. The ideas of courtship have their foundation in erroneous ideas concerning marriage. They follow impulse and blind passion. The courtship is carried on in a spirit of flirtation.
the parties frequently violate the rules of modesty and reserve and are guilty of indiscretion if they do not break the law of God. The high, noble, lofty design of God in the institution of marriage is not discerned. Therefore, the purest affections of the heart, the noblest traits of character, are not developed. Not one word should be spoken, not one action performed, that you would not be willing the holy angels should look upon and register in the books above. You should have an eye single to the glory of God. The heart should have only pure, sanctified affection, worthy of the followers of Jesus Christ, exalted in its nature, and more heavenly than earthly. Anything different from this is debasing, degrading in courtship, and marriage cannot be holy and honorable in the sight of a pure and holy God unless it is after the exalted scriptural principle.
These precautions may be regarded as unnecessary, but those who will plead for greater liberty are not worthy to be connected with these institutions. Mild license is termed liberty and freedom, but those who are professedly sons and daughters of God should elevate the standard and have no fellowship with the unruly who would have rules and regulations made to meet the cases of the disobedient. The sanitarium, unless hedged about with vigilant rules and regulations, would soon become a hotbed of iniquity. There are those who would entrap and mislead souls. They have a spirit to revile, instead of showing respect for those who carry the burden and seek to keep up the standard. The fewer of such persons employed, the safer and purer will be the moral atmosphere of the sanitarium. There always will be persons who will find entrance to such an institution, whose influence will be for evil. They are of that class who are continually putting bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. There are professed Christians who will warp the conscience and becloud the mind under the pretense of godliness. And those who do not see nor sense the danger are already the dupes or victims of Satan. Let every youth take heed to his ways. Let every medical student build his foundations on the eternal rock. Ellen G. White Estate, Washington, D.C., January 22, 1988.